Hey, this is Dr. Drew, and I just want to thank you for joining the Dr. Drew podcast and supporting the Corolla Pirate Ship here at the Corolla Network. And please, just a reminder, tell a friend about these podcasts. That is how this thing grows organically, and that is how we want this to grow. We want it to be a community of people that connect, and we talk about interesting things. And by the way, feel free to give us feedback and stuff, particularly for my show, that you'd like to hear. We'll be happy to set it up on the program. And again, tell a friend and keep this pirate ship afloat.
This is Corolla Digital.
Before we get started here, I want to take a call. Let's go on out to Betty. Betty, what's up?
Hi, Dr. Drew. I'd like to know if after long-term crack cocaine use, there's evidence of brain damage. And if a CAT scan shows it, is it helpful at all in treating that person?
Unfortunately, you can show addicts all the evidence in the world of everything you can imagine about the consequences of their condition, and none of it makes a damn bit of difference. But let me do answer your question specifically. On a CAT scan, no, you will not see changes unless there's been a stroke, which can happen from cocaine particularly. The CAT scan will not show it. A functional MRI scan definitely shows all kinds of changes, as does a SPECT scan. But if you remember back in Celebrity Rehab where I was treating Dennis Rodman and Heidi Fleisch, I went and did SPECT scans on them, showed them the massive areas of dysfunction in their brain, and they just blew it off. Yeah, all right, anyway, that's what you say. That's sort of their thing. It made no difference whatsoever. It didn't break through their denial, didn't help anything. And so, yes, there's all kinds of brain changes that can be documented. Showing it to an addict, does it make any difference? Nope, doesn't seem to.
Are there vitamins or supplements
no.
that can be used
no.
that would help heal
no.
all the damage?
No, no, of course.
It's permanent. You're saying it's permanent.
No, I didn't say it's permanent. Oh. I said that when they're using, there's all kinds of damages. There are all kinds of changes, rather. There can be damage that is permanent. Methamphetamine, Molly, and ecstasy are the things that are most commonly associated with permanent changes. And in those situations, it's medication. I mean, you're fighting a brain structural change. You can't just take a vitamin and expect that to get better. You have to fight fire with fire. You have to use very powerful medication to compensate. And they do tend to work. They get depletion of areas of the brain associated with depression and mood problems and memory. And both can be improved with certain medication. Okay?
Thank you very much
right,
for your time.
You
Bye-bye.
Bet. All right. Before we go to my guest, I want to remind you all about our friends at Lumosity.com. Of course, we all have so many things to remember these days, dates, passwords, all this stuff, where our work and personal lives depend on us remembering a lot. Well, Lumosity.com customizes for these brain functions to improve things like memory. I've used Lumosity.com playing these games on a regular basis. Sometimes before we start a podcast or a radio program, it helps me focus, and it does help with memory. Lumosity.com is like a personal trainer for your brain. It's intended to help with certain mental functions, and the games are fun. And again, they're games. They only take a few minutes every day. The website reminds you that it's time to practice, and they have customized the specific – you actually can customize it to your specific needs. You can play online at work, at home, even from an iPhone. There's a Lumosity app. It is on my phone. And I want you to go to Lumosity.com today. Click the Start Training button to create your own personalized program. Select my name from the drop-down menu, then start playing your first game. That is Lumosity.com. At sign up, select Dr. Drew, DR, period, DREW, in the drop down menu. Sign up today. And now on to our guest, Simone Bien. The great Simone Bien joins me today. Welcome to the Dr. Drew podcast. Couple things.
Can I be hysterical?
May I introduce you first? You
Go
may.
On,
you may. The podcast has been on long enough that there's been a couple of fan favorites that have emerged. And one of them is Miss Simone Bien, who there's been a lot of action in social media to please bring her back. Of course, no problem.
Thank you.
Yeah. I don't know if you actually had your friends Twitter me or,
of course,
me or whatever.
But, of course.
But there's been a bit of it, and it made sense to me because our stuff together has been good, I thought. And you're always welcome back. So You should know you're in the same camp with Fred Stoller, which I was a little different. Fred, you got to listen to the Fred Stoller episodes. He and his mom make appearances on the show.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm going to listen.
It's his mom, as you would say. But so, go ahead.
No,
be hysterical.
I just wanted to say thank you so much for having me back.
Yeah.
But aside from all that, oh, Drew, I love you.
Oh.
It's just so nice to see you.
Feeling better.
Feeling better, feeling in charge, getting your swagger back.
I haven't really talked about my whole procedure, and I'm going to talk about that down the line a little bit, but I went through hell.
Yeah.
Simone kindly came and visited me while I was in my recovery. It was bad. I was a mess.
What everyone has to know, which is really funny. Well, it's not funny. I mean, it was a very sad time, but just how you were like, I've been lying down for like an hour. I mean, and it's like, yes, Drew, learn to sit, lie down. There was a funny moment where I came to pull you up and you nearly dislocated my arm.
Oh.
And then luckily your son was there,
so I said,
Jordan,
player. I said, someone, just step aside for a second. Let's get somebody here who can do this. Because I was like full assist. I couldn't move. And I literally for a month just sat either on that couch where you found me or in our backyard. I don't know what the hell happened. I was not myself. And that's the weirdest part about going through a procedure, something like that, is when you're not yourself, your brain isn't working right. I don't think that at all. I'd have a good time.
What was it like for you? Because I think this is a really good message for anybody. I think today we're busier than ever. We can be workaholics. We can be busy. What was it like for you? And I know you weren't feeling well, so it wasn't relaxing. But what was it like for you just lying down and staying put and being, in some senses, not able to do what you wanted to do?
If it were just – if like today – feeling well, I could go lie down like that. I think that'd be pleasurable.
Yeah.
But when you're time's not really passing for you, or sort of is, but it isn't. You don't know. You're not quite all present. Like literally, I would lie on that couch in front of the television and not watch television. I couldn't like tolerate it. Couldn't tolerate anything but just sitting like being in a zone. And that's you're like semi comatose. It's not pleasant.
No.
Yeah, and miserable and pain, all kinds of good stuff like that too. Bad times.
Yeah.
However, good
times now.
Yeah, fine. Everything's good, and I'll talk about it. I'm speaking a little more about it right this moment than I have so far. It's a important tale for men, and so I want to present it in a way that other men can benefit from my experience, because this is a common thing, And there's a freak out factor to what I had that men needn't go through.
Yeah.
And I'd like to diminish some of that in however I tell this tale. So.
Yeah. And I think that would be such a valuable, valuable gift.
Yeah.
Because
you also
see it from both sides. And
as a physician, you mean?
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. That was –
and the human side.
And it made it easier for me because I really understood the context of what I was going through. If I'd known it was disastrous, I would have known that.
Yeah.
And if I'd known we were being conservative and that was a good thing, was what we did, I had a judgment about that. And I'd like to convey some of that so other men develop that kind of judgment too.
Can I ask on an emotional side? Mm. Oh, what a surprise. I'm talking about
shocking,
emotions. Were you surprised? Because often when we go through a big life challenge, we recognize, who is there for us, our loved ones, the impact that we have on others.
Yeah.
For you, did you go through that journey? I went through that journey when I had my divorce, and I went through that also actually over the last 6 months in a very mini way, really noticing new country, what particular friends were there and people. For you, what did you notice?
I think what you're saying is things come into sharp focus. Mm. A lot of things do, right? Is that what you mean?
That's much better than I said.
Yeah, and it was there was some stuff. Yeah, there was a lot of stuff that went down. And that made it even more difficult for me.
But did you notice how people really care?
Or if there were shortcomings, you notice it.
Right. Okay. So talking about really caring, did you notice one particular friend of yours that sent a card and did a candlelight vigil for you?
Yes.
And
no, and when you came and visited me, I was like, oh, yes, that's somebody who cares. I appreciated that.
I more than care.
No,
I know that everybody
By the way, that is, I ran into you in the hall at HLN and we were talking about some patient care stuff. And you said, sometimes I really don't know what I'm doing for them. And I said, I know. And that moment of you showing caring for me is a part of that thing I call talent that really makes good therapists good, that ability to be deeply attuned and empathic to others. And you have that. And you've said in the past that your own journey is what gave you that.
Yeah, without a doubt.
So it's as treatment itself gave you that.
Yeah, treatment and actually childhood experiences. I think I sort of learned to be a good therapist when I was 5 years old, actually, or even younger, learning to care for adults who weren't able to care for themselves.
Okay,
if
so,
you get my
so,
meaning.
Yeah, I do. And there's a book out there called The Drama of the Gifted Child that is very much about that theme. It's a theme I could relate very strongly to. It's a theme that I think many codependents can relate to. So how did you take it from a liability, codependency, and again, I'm using codependency in a grotesque sort of casual way, but I think people know what that means.
Yeah, no, I think it's good. I use it very broadly because people understand it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how did you go from codependency to maintaining boundaries and being available in a healthy way?
I'm sitting here giggling because it's like, I'm pretty codependent.
Still working on it.
Work in progress. Yeah. I think that was the therapeutic journey.
Yeah.
That was undoubtedly. And that was also sort of really recognizing my sort of taking responsibility, actually, and sort of through a divorce, through being there in really bad, ugly relationships, through acting out myself, and suddenly hitting my version of rock bottom, where I ended up in hospital for 5 days, recognizing, obviously, didn't even realize at the time he was a drug addict. I mean, for goodness sake. And it was like, seriously, what planet was I on?
Yeah.
But really recognizing, okay, come on. There's a pattern here. I've got to take responsibility. And once I did that, it really gave me power. I was able to say, okay, I can make choices.
But you didn't recover in that moment. You had to go then do a whole shitload of work.
Oh, yeah, shitload.
Yeah.
And still, absolutely still working on it. And I think for me, Al-Anon, and I want to, with anybody listening who's grown up with a parent who has problems with, you know, any kind of addiction or alcohol abuse, go to Al-Anon. I was sitting in an Al-Anon meeting, and I know it's all anonymous, but, says the good Al-Anon person here, but I'm going to be very generic. There was somebody who was actually doing a talk, and I won't say how she knows of you, Drew, but she'd come into contact with you. Mm-hmm. And it was so interesting because she said, when I'd worked with Dr. Drew, it was somebody you worked with, but you've worked with a lot of people, so we're fine.
Yeah.
But when I'd worked with Dr. Drew, when he started talking about Al-Anon, how important it was for recovery, you know, that changed my life. Mm. And you and I had obviously been friends for sort of a couple of years by the time I heard that, and I just thought, this is so beautiful. And now giving it back to you, how you often don't realize how much you impact people. You've impacted my life so much.
Oh, that's very sweet.
And really have. And how you get that message out there, and that's why I think it's really important for you to carry on doing this in a different way.
You're talking about my thing, yeah.
With your experiences. Yeah. Because That is a gift, and it's not even just a gift to the one person experiencing it. It is a gift to all of their family, and that's what you do. And, you know, families are very important.
I'm having a funny reaction when you tell me that, and maybe it's my own shit, and maybe it's something of the time. But I take so much crap in the media and in social media and general media. I question that all the time. Whether I'm doing good or not. And
yeah, because this is – my husband pointed this out when I was like, oh, my goodness, Drew's got 2.5 million, you know, Twitter followers or how many things. And we were talking about sort of when my Twitter numbers went up. Thank you, everyone. About
– oh, let's get your Twitter handle. It's
at Simone Bien.
She took the underscore out, thank God.
Oh, yeah, thanks to Mike.
Yes. So that's Simone Bien, B-I-E-N-N-E. Yeah.
But how, actually, when you get a bit of negativity, well, of course, suddenly
you focus
it's because
on that.
You focus on that, your brain processes it, but also because you're speaking to a much broader audience. And what you said, and I think this is so, so true, was how, in today's generation, people aren't getting outlets to express their anger. So what do? They just get on Twitter and they bully.
They act it out. Yeah.
They act it out because you've got something I don't want. You know, or I mean, you've got something I want.
But see, what you're saying is something I believe to be true, which is that envy is a common feeling these days. And people, I don't think, understand the difference between envy and jealousy. So let's define that. Jealousy is, you got something I want, makes me feel bad.
Yeah.
Now, but jealousy can be very positive too. It can also be like
motivator.
Yeah, I want to have that. I feel like it makes me feel bad that you have it, but yeah. God bless you, and I want to do. I'll work harder and get like you. Envy is you have what I have. The fact that you have whatever that is, you have something I want. It diminishes me, so I must knock you down to my size in order for me to feel okay. And that's as bad as humans get.
Yes.
In terms of general emotions or common emotions. That's the worst one.
And it can be, yeah, it's very ugly and very, very destructive.
Yeah.
I'm going to remind you of something that Dr. Oz said because it was very strange, Drew. And again, possibly going to sound like a stalker here. but it's all right. I'm a stalking friend.
Yes. Stalkers go, you're amongst the best.
Thank you.
And I have stalkers.
Oh,
some have been horrible too.
Yeah, that's not pleasant.
I was asked to be on the Discovery ID show, the stalking show, to tell one of my stories. It's terrible. Anyway, go ahead.
And it's still
Stalkers don't go away. They sort of get better or worse. Yeah, it's crazy.
It's a good job you've got your guns. By guns, I'm not meaning anything, your arms. But I'm going to remind you of something that Dr. Oz said, and it was on a Sunday, and you'd come into my head, and I was thinking about you, and I'd text you. Then the next day, somebody had emailed saying, have you seen the New York Times feature on Dr. Drew? No, I hadn't seen the New York Times feature, but you were in the New York Times on Sunday, and I'd thought of you anyway. So isn't that funny? Jung would call that, yes, collective consciousness.
Yeah,
we're all
like
thinking
that.
About Dr. Drew, and I got pulled into it. But Dr. Ross said something which I thought really made sense.
In that article
and put things into perspective. And anyone can go and look it up. It's online now, newyorktimes.com, obviously Google Dr. Drew. And what he had said was, isn't it funny? You know, people get, when I talk about heart disease, people know that there are going to be deaths and it's going to kill people. But actually, for some people, this still, because we are so much in denial, perhaps we see addiction much closer to ourselves than heart disease. You know, people don't get the fact that what you do is a deadly and
disease. Even a more subtle part of it, which is people understand that, that's a down and out heroin addict. He died. But as soon as they come in contact with treating professionals, what do you mean? How could they die? And especially when it goes under the rubric of mental health, people aren't used to mental health illnesses killing people, yet they do all the time. Mm-hmm. And so if somebody with depression dies of suicide, they blame the psychiatrist, right? It's like, you couldn't even save that person? No, no matter what we do, a certain percentage of mental illness is going to result in death,
yeah.
No matter what we do, the best of circumstances. And there are things – I believe there are situations we shouldn't even try to treat. Because they're just going to die, and you might make it faster. Who knows? Might make it better. But it's really, we probably shouldn't be messing with it because it could make things worse.
And I also think, with regards to addiction, certainly my own journey was that until actually I started working very closely with you, still when I went to Al-Anon, you don't really fully understand because you naively think, well, they can stop. If they want to stop, they can stop. And that couldn't be further from the truth.
Right.
And I think that is the message that, of course, you still are getting out there and still needs to be out
there. Brain disease.
Yeah.
And and the other part of that, and maybe you sort of appreciate this since you work so much with patients in this fashion, is that we treat illnesses below the neck completely differently than we treat illnesses above the neck.
Yeah.
Meaning brain illnesses somehow, no, that's not an illness. That's a character weakness. That's a cognitive problem. You should be able to think your way out of that or can't. And we unfortunately have a world in which daytime television talk shows – mind you guys, these are just talk shows. These are not treatment programs.
Yes.
These are talk shows. People doing good talk shows make it seem like, hey, you just get your shit together, man. Just get it going. Don't you realize what your heroin addiction is doing to your family? Get it together.
Yeah.
That's nothing.
The big round of applause.
That's zero. Actually zero meaning.
Yeah. It's interesting, actually, because it's also, when you're talking about sort of treating illnesses from the neck down, I also see sexuality like that as well, that we don't, I obviously do a lot of work with couples, and women and men, but women especially, where their sexuality is seen as something so separate from themselves. And the best work that I do is being able to help women understand and really own their sexuality.
Why do you think women do that?
Because I know I'm trying to figure out, there are so many different influences from what, you know, how they've been brought up, from them not being encouraged to, you know, enjoy their bodies, from having bad body image, from having a poor self image. And our sexuality is so much more disconnected than a man's. That seems to be sort of in much more of a straight line.
Literally.
Yeah, literally. And so women, it's a really tricky business, and it can be quite long work. I was just seeing a patient of mine who I've seen for 4 years, and no presenting history of sexual abuse, none whatsoever, no presenting history of emotional abuse. The thing that was in her family, and this is quite common, grew up in a household where they didn't talk about emotions.
Mm.
And because feelings are associated so much to a woman's sexuality, mm-hmm. it's like her being able to talk about her feelings is so much more, oh, gosh, you know, why am I having these pleasurable feelings? And I mean, there's many different sort of aspects. But if we can't talk about our feelings, vulnerability becomes difficult. Well, sexuality is all about being able to surrender, being able to know that you are strong and vulnerable,
mm-hmm.
you know, being out of control.
Right.
So it's good work.
Is she British?
Yes.
It's so much more of a British thing, that whole controlling emotion thing. It's so interesting. Well, was she sent away to school too?
No, she wasn't. Now, you say that it's British, and now I can tell you.
It's here, I'm sure, but it's so here, common there.
I tell you what, here is how it's presented differently.
Mm.
Through, and I mean this in a really loving way to everyone, and it's not judgmental. Here, because of religion, the messages that women pick up about themselves through religion, that's where the control issue comes in.
Interesting.
So
it's sinful and bad rather than
sinful
just
and
disconnected.
Bad. And so England, it's not talking about their feelings, because in America, they just, you know, it's wonderful how we talk about feelings.
But there's something called alexithymia, where people can't name and identify feelings. And that's a harder thing to get in touch with. It's a subtle wiring issue. So I imagine that takes more time, more nourishment, more intensity of attunement and that kind of stuff, as opposed to convincing somebody they're not bad.
Yeah,
which is a little more cognitive.
It's more cognitive. However, it is still really difficult, because if for such a long time, since you were sort of 2 years old, you've been told that, like, from sort of below your belly button, kind of down there is bad. I've seen women, you know, who aren't sexually confident. These are beautiful, confident, strong women who can have sex during their 20s and be really free. Suddenly they get really close and intimate, and it's like, oh my goodness, is this person going to leave me now? Because actually I'm being, you know, they've either had children, or, you know, I'm being
bad,
naughty.
Well, they'll see this bad part of me.
Yeah.
And there are men that do that too. There are men that get that weird shit in their head. That's that whole, what has traditionally been called a Madonna whore split.
Yes.
Men will sometimes be uncomfortable with someone who is their wife and a mother and sexual.
Yeah.
They'll
and
be
it's
weird about that.
Yeah. And then it becomes very difficult.
Do those
then
women tend to gravitate to those men?
I wonder.
Share that.
I mean, it's difficult for me to say, because actually I see couples who are healthy in that aspect of, they want to connect.
Hmm.
They want to do something about it. And I get very good results. And that's what is wonderful, even though it can really not make sense. How come at the beginning of our relationship, we were at it like rabbits and everybody was, you know, much freer? And now suddenly there's, you know, a real intimacy between us. And, you know, you can actually be displaying things of, oh, gosh, no, this doesn't feel bad. And also breasts. I'm hearing a lot about breasts, but not sadly in the sexy, juicy, gorgeous way, but how a lot of the time through breastfeeding, how, you know, breasts can mean, you know, it can be completely off bounds to guys when women are breastfeeding.
Mm.
And especially if the breastfeeding goes, you know, sort of over a certain period of time, it can be very difficult for a woman to feel sexual, because a lot of men love breasts. Yay. And that can be difficult for the woman, because it's like, no, don't touch me there. And suddenly that can trigger, oh, for goodness, you know, hold on. I don't want to be sort of pulled in this direction and that direction. I've even heard actually how children will touch a woman's breasts in a nicer way than their husbands. So that let that be a lesson to you,
well,
gentlemen.
But this goes into that whole domain of early childhood and marriages, which is the time in which marriages report their least degree of satisfaction. The most unhappiness, whenever they measure marital satisfaction, it always hits a bottom during the childhood years.
Yes.
And this is just another of the many, 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 many ways that all those conflicted feelings and the new relationships get in the way of the primary relationship.
Now, let me tell you some jolly news and not so jolly news.
Jolly. Let's hear some jolly news.
Jolly news is, well, I have to sort of backtrack with the not so jolly news. Bosley is my Boston Terrier. Mm-hmm. And if you like dogs, then do have a look on my Twitter feed, because I've been told by so many people, show more personality in your Twitter feed. It's like, well, I'm codependent and it's through my dog. So you'll just get lots of my dog. Now, what I'm doing is something that probably, you know, doesn't actually work well on a podcast, but because Drew is such a wordsmith, Bosley had a seizure. Since he's had a seizure, uh-oh, something's happened to his brain, and I am telling you, Drew, well, let's just say I'm going to show you a picture, and I'd like you to describe it to your audience.
Of him? Of
Bosley. This has been happening since his seizure.
Oh, he's become hypersexual. Interesting.
My dog has become a sex addict. He needs to come and see you.
Is he on anything for the seizure?
No, he's not at the moment, because we've just got to sort of monitor how it is. But I want to describe the picture. There's Ginger, who is the Ginger's dad is Adam's friend who lives next door. John Altshuler, Adam Carolla's friend. And what really makes me laugh about this picture is, first of all, Bosley with the Boston Terrier, the really big, if you look at his really big eyes, looking really, really intense. He's basically, Bosley is just, I'd like to say he's got his penis somewhere near her vagina,
but he hasn't.
He's just got little penis. He's tiny, by the way, against her leg.
Yeah.
And it's not even out.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
You know? And
has Bosley been fixed or no?
Yeah, Bosley has been fixed. He hasn't even got any balls.
He's
at least my, you know, cardboard boxer, my boxer dog, had like what I would call a 50 pence piece, wagging around. A flap of skin. We didn't go for the silicone balls to inject and make him feel like a man. But anyway, so he's humping Ginger. And what I like about this picture, and I want to show this to my sex therapy clients, is that the guy looks so into it and so intense. And Ginger, their little
Could
terrier, is like, what am I having for my tea later?
I think it's a lot of how humans experience.
I know. I just
women are doing their grocery list and what's up for later.
Yeah.
Men are like, life or death for
men. This is just amazing. This is so intense.
Amazing. It's like life or death is on the
line. Look at his eyes.
It
looks like life or death.
Yeah.
So,
these guys relate. See the look on their face across the window there?
These young men before us. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But he had a seizure, huh?
Yeah.
So there's actually a name for that when a certain prefrontal area doesn't work so well. It's called the Kluver-Busey syndrome.
Oh, gosh.
Primates with documented monkeys, they become hypersexual when they get lesions.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, so what do I do? Just let him enjoy it.
Maybe he's a little manicky too?
Well, he's always a little bit manicky.
Yeah, maybe he's a little part of his mania. I don't know.
He's got me as a mother. Of course he's manic.
All right, let's do this. Let's take a little break and let us come back with some phone calls for me Simone, and we'll answer. Let's see what's up there. Relationship question, wife behavior. Good. Excellent. Good relationship questions for Simone. And we'll take a quick break. Be right back after this. And of course, our friends at GoToMeeting. That's right. To be successful in business, you need to meet with your team regularly. And if you want to do it wherever you are, we do it here all the time. Wherever you are, whenever you need it, you can get together with GoToMeeting by Citrix. It is a powerful and simple way to collaborate online. GoToMeeting with HD Faces gives your team the ability to share on the same screen. You get a video conference where you get to see everybody, and you can put up documents and work on them. You can actually work on one another's documents while the meeting is underway. It's easy to launch a meeting from anywhere, including computer, smartphone, tablet, even from your iPad. And this is how we do it here at the Corolla Empire. So try GoToMeeting free for 30 days. That's right, free for 30 days. Visit GoToMeeting.com, click the Try It Free button, and use the promo code Dr. Drew, DRDREW. Remember, GoToMeeting.com, Try It Free button, and promo code Dr. Drew. GoToMeeting. Meeting is believing. Who gets the honor? Welcome back to Dr. Drew Podcast. Simone and I can't stop talking.
Sorry.
That's our problem here. Simone Bien, the great Simone Bien, at Simone Bien, B-I-E-N-N-E, is the Twitter handle. The website is?
It's there's two. So if you want to come and see me for sex therapy or relationship therapy, helpingyourrelationship.com.
Oh, nice.
Or my usual website where I've got my blog, which is the last one was done probably about 3 years ago. No, I'm only joking. Is SimoneBien.com.
And I don't... I want to say this correctly without being overly gushy, but you know, I refer I know talent when I see it. Simone has talent. So if you're having a relationship problem, she will get good results. She knows what she's doing. I bet the outcomes are good for you because you have a skill that's well beyond knowledge. And that's what's important in these sorts of endeavors. So let us go to some phone calls and see what's going on here. Let's go first off to John. What's up, John? 26.
Dr. Drew, how you doing?
Hey, John, what's up?
Hi, Simone. It's great to talk to you guys.
Hey,
you guys need a show together.
We had one for a while. Now we're doing this.
Yeah.
We'll do more of this.
Thank you.
Good idea. Gary, something you think about.
I would watch it every day. Well, Dr. Drew, I called before about, you know, stopping all that stuff like the Suboxone and Valium and whatnot.
Yes.
And I stopped cigarettes after 10 years.
Congratulations.
I just did that recently.
You sound great.
Like a month. Thanks. But I had a question for Simone in particular because, well, you too, Drew, because after you stop all this kind of stuff, you're able to see yourself better, you know, and see kind of other problems that you have. And I kind of feel like I couldn't take care of any problems when I had those kinds. So now that they're kind of gone or whatnot, the dependencies and stuff, like I've been thinking about the whole girl thing and I feel like I don't know how to love. Is that possible? Like being really caring, but yet not really knowing how to love, and because my parents didn't have a relationship with me, and so I feel like I didn't learn how to do it. Because I've never had a girlfriend over a year, and I'm 26.
Let me frame this a couple of different ways, and then I'll have Simone answer it, which is love is a complicated and probably... We probably all mean different things when we say it.
Yeah.
So I prefer to think of it more about the capacity for intimacy, which is really the necessary component for a healthy relationship. And intimacy is something we can break down. Love usually comes along with that or something that a given individual would call love. But intimacy is something that we can analyze and look at and talk about. And intimacy, I'm not comfortable talking about it being a learned behavior. Although it kind of is, it's more something that must be experienced over and over and over again. Learning implies cognition, and it's more about having been in the frame of intimacy over long periods of time that then gives you the capacity for intimacy. And I get that your parents didn't do that. So with that said, I'm going to have Simone comment.
I really like, John, the way Drew broke that down, because my hunch is when you said learned – I guess you mean experienced. Yeah. And there is a subtle difference. And what Drew is saying is that actually you can learn it, to use it in your language. You can experience it. But for you, when you sort of strip yourself away out of, you know, and get rid of all your cover-ups and the addiction that you were talking about, suddenly it's like, oh my goodness, here is John. Mm-hmm. You're looking at you in the mirror. And the biggest thing about intimacy, I think, is that it can be broken down into me see. You're asking somebody to kind of really come into your world and see you for who you are. And I mean, I have this as well, John, but as you sort of get a stronger sense of self and actually learn to really like yourself, intimacy is going to become, you know, a lot easier. So you do know how to love because you are born with the capacity to love. And you and your next partner need to be at least liking and then loving the same person, and that's you. So if you can really work on that and just think, God, you know, I am a good catch, and keep working on actually what you would be able to give to a relationship, and then just learn and dip your toe in and feel safe of being vulnerable, that's how you can experience it.
You know who experienced this in spades is our buddy Mike Catherwood, who Simone and I worked with together. And he's been in some intensive therapy lately, and he got married. And he's been really coming along with this.
It was interesting, John. And actually, when I saw Mike and Drew sort of about 2 months ago, and I hadn't seen Mike for a little bit because he lives way over in Venice. And seriously, I mean, it's easier to get to England than Venice from where I live. But it was so interesting. And I remember speaking to Drew about it afterwards, seeing Mike so happy. And what Drew is talking about is that therapeutic relationship, which you can get from, yeah. I'm not joking, from listening to this podcast, you can pick up things about yourself.
It's my third time calling. What therapy would I ask for in particular?
Well, how long have you been
behavioral, cognitive?
No,
I mean,
not. Emotionally focused, we'd say emotionally focused therapy, EFT. And any good therapist should be able to provide that and sort of make the decision if that's what you really need. We're glossing, you know, over this. We wouldn't. You know, for us to say this is the kind of treatment you need, John, is a little irresponsible because we don't treat you. We haven't assessed you. Somebody would have to do that. But the other thing is that your relationship with your sponsor, in my sort of understanding of recovery, I always see that as the first brush with intimacy when somebody gets out of.
I've done it alone.
You got to get a sponsor. You got to go do steps. Got to get a sponsor because that's why you're alone. That's why you're stuck. That's why you are alone. Because one of the most common deficiencies in addicts is the ability to tolerate closeness. Yeah. And the relationship with the sponsor is your first model of closeness. And with him, you work this through and you talk about these things and you learn to see yourself through a new pair of glasses, i.e. your sponsors, who understands deeply what you're contending with because he's been there.
I could trust a professional. I probably couldn't trust someone in that.
All right. So,
Well, I just don't know how to find it. You know, I'm moving to Austin, Texas, so I'm hoping there will be more stuff like that there. But yeah. I just didn't know what to ask for. Emotionally focused. Okay,
emotionally focused. And, I mean, John, go on my email me and I can sort of help you out further if you want.
There you go. Let's do that, John. Okay.
Yeah. Drew, on this point, I think this is a valuable thing to put out there. Obviously, I'm a relationship and sex therapist, yeah. And so I know myself. I like looking into myself. It's not always easy. Even with my husband, who luckily can sort of smile and laugh about this, even with my husband, I was like, okay, so I'm doing this new thing with couples where they look into each other's eyes. And through my husband, Justin, just looking into my eyes, I could feel, and this is not always, but at that particular time, and we've done it since and it's been better, I could feel my heart rate rise. Mm-hmm. So I was having, it was bringing on anxiety for me because he was looking at me so deeply. Mm-hmm. So even, I've been married for 5 years and I love him to bits, but even that level of intimacy can be quite overwhelming because, like John, I didn't have that kind of upbringing where intimacy was safe for me.
I got to send you Stephen Porges' stuff about the vagal nerve and the heart and how the connection between things like this, emotional experiences, and the heart and the vagal nerve. It's stunning how well worked out that is. Yeah, it's crazy. So there's probably a specific interpretation to what's going on with you physiologically with that. Interesting.
Happy days.
Let's keep going here. This is now, by the way, what episode was the Porges episode? 63. Stephen Porges. You should listen to it.
Thank you. Yeah.
Please listen to it.
Yeah,
I think
you'll
love it. David, go ahead.
Hey, guys. Been dating my girlfriend or fiance for 5 years and proposed to her a couple months ago. And then last month, she kind of indicated that she's not sure if she's feeling the way she needs to be feeling and has asked for space. And I just want to get your guys' opinion or thoughts as to what.
How old is she?
I need her. 26.
Well, the one thing for sure is you don't want to continue into a marriage with somebody who is ambivalent. Wouldn't you agree, Simone?
Right.
That for sure.
Yeah, my first question I've got to ask, just because I've seen this, and I completely agree. Did her mom and dad split up?
No.
So they're still together?
Yep.
And what's their marriage like?
In this country, you got to always ask the question a second time around.
Hold on.
This is her biological father that the mom is with?
Yeah, no, they've been together.
Okay. You sure that's the biological father?
Yes.
Okay,
yeah.
All right. In this country, you got to ask that question.
I'm learning. So their mom and dad are still together.
Especially in Florida, where he's calling from.
Yeah, I know. Well, I'm not... I'm in the good part of Florida.
All right, good.
I'm on the coast, so. Right.
And David, with regards to their marriage, I'll tell you where I'm going in a minute here, but how is their marriage? What is the blueprint of her relationship? Because just because parents are still together doesn't mean mm-hmm. that it's the right blueprint.
No, I mean, I've been around them, like I said, for 5 years, and they're as loving as I could expect, you know, two parents to be. Same thing with my parents, so it's not anything abnormal there.
How old were her parents when they got married?
That I don't know.
Because sometimes, again, Simone used the blueprint idea, and people sometimes will work from the blueprint of their parents and start thinking, well, my parents get married at 30. I need a little more time here. I'm getting rushed into this. The other thing is, and I don't know why I'm feeling this, any chance she's meeting other people or anything?
She just started a new job last year, and she's become close with people at work. She's been spending a lot more time with them, which I'm fine with, but...
What do you do for a living?
What does she do?
No, what does she do, and what do you do?
I am a financial analyst for a company that owns specialty pharmacies,
okay.
And she does marketing.
Okay. Oh, I don't know, David. I think you ought to really sit her down and get her to come clean about why the change of heart. Because there's something missing in the information here. This business of, hey, I just need a little space. Like, yeah, fine. If you were 20-year-olds and dating for 6 months and it's not working out, you're fiancés.
Yeah.
Something has intervened here that caused – how long have you been engaged?
A couple months now.
Yeah, I would really sit down and give her every opportunity to be honest. Find a way to put it all on the table.
That's really good advice, because the reason I was going down the blueprint line is I've actually seen a lot of men, rather than women, but a lot of men who will suddenly be terrified of marriage or about having – children becoming a father because of the blueprint they've had. Mm-hmm. Either the mother has died or the parents split up or they didn't know the father. You know, there's always been sort of something that has made them want to think, yes, I really want this, but oh my goodness, no, you know, I'm not going to go there because they hadn't addressed the painful stuff from their past. Mm-hmm. Seeing as that is you in your mind, John, everything is all fine. David, sorry, everything is all fine. Stick with when Drew has a feeling,
yeah,
it tends to be right.
Yeah, be careful with my feelings. I would really get just something has had to have happened to cause the change of heart. And mind you, this is a change of heart that is so significant that she's willing to break up an engagement. And so it's something really powerful has to be happening to her.
Yeah, because this is supposed to be the happiest time, as you know,
yeah,
David.
And it may be what Simone's saying, that she just suddenly got cold feet because the blueprint isn't right. But I'm just the new job, the new people, the new perspective. Something has changed in her emotions.
And David, why did you ask her to marry you at the particular time that you did?
We had talked about it earlier a couple of years ago, but we weren't, I guess, financially secure as we are now. So I'd always thought that we were emotionally ready. We just weren't financially ready until now. So that was kind of the change.
Right.
All right, my friend. Call me back after you've had a chance to talk to her and see what she puts on the table there.
Yeah.
Whenever a woman says, I've had a change of heart, like now I've had a change of heart, it's not like she'd been complaining for months and months and I'm not sure. Suddenly. Change of heart?
I read some interesting divorce statistics the other day, which surprised me. Mm. And I don't know how accurate they were, but it was from one particular survey that said in America, the majority of divorces are actually brought forward by the woman being dissatisfied and
sure
unhappy.
That does not surprise me at all.
Yeah, which that surprised me because I expected it to be either the man cheating or...
Yeah, but the man cheating makes the woman unhappy. So the man will cheat and stay in the marriage. He's happy. He's fine. She's unhappy.
Right. Oh, can I just say something that really actually makes me venomous?
Uh-huh.
Don't worry, not in a Jodi Arias kind of a way.
Okay.
This is contained. If I see one more poster, AshleyMadison.com.
Oh, yeah. Isn't that crazy?
Saving marriages.
Yeah.
Giving that marriage that special feeling again.
Yeah.
I actually thought, Drew, you need to get me on your show up against... I can't remember. Norman, Nigel, whatever his name is, because I really want to cut him to size.
Gary, you want to set that up maybe, Chris? Not a bad idea.
It's not a bad idea.
Right, we'll do it. Set it up. Let's keep going to some calls here. This is Clark, 25. What's up, Clark?
Hey, Drew. Simone, it's always great to hear from you. I appreciate you taking my call. Basically, the situation is that my mother was a severely abused child, emotionally, physically, everything you can name. Ran away from home when she was 15 years old and was eventually, you know, finished her upbringing with another family whom I've always considered my grandparents. But my mom never got any kind of help or therapy or anything like that, and was never physically abusive to me. I'm the youngest. She's of four kids. She was never physically abusive to me, but has always been very emotionally abusive, and can tend to fly into a rage at certain times, which unfortunately I also have a tendency to do. And my wife and I are currently experiencing a difficult time in our marriage, where I am exhibiting some of my worst qualities when I get upset, and at least from my perspective, she is exhibiting some of those rage-like, emotionally abusive tendencies that my mom has always exhibited. And I've mentioned that to her. It did not go over well, and I'm just wondering what can I do to help my wife understand that some of these things that she's doing are a trigger behavior for me, and make it that much harder for me to stay cool and collected, you know, during confrontations. I just am really at a loss.
Interesting question, and another interesting example of how people get attracted to the abuses, the traumas of the past. Mm. They find somebody that fits that mold, that they cast that play over and over again.
And what is interesting, Clark, without putting a pretty spin on it, but actually an emotional, looking at it through a sort of one kind of emotional lens, is that this is how you can help heal yourself. Because
with the two of them getting better.
With the two of you sort of really working this through and working this struggle, this is how you can heal your past wounds. I would suggest, Clark, if you can in any way, go for some counseling or
together,
some therapy together. I really think together, because it's interesting. When I do work with couples, having the space, for example, for you, Clark, to say just what you told Drew and I just then is really, really important in a really safe,
safe setting
where you can explain so beautifully that you did and take responsibility for it, that actually, okay, this is a trigger for me. And then somebody can help you contain it and help you heal together.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And she, my wife knows that she has a temper and can get, you know, more angry than she needs to, but she just doesn't see that some of the things she's doing. And I've had to say, you know, and I have probably not phrased it the best way that I could, but I've had to say, I feel like I'm listening to my mom right now. You know, I feel like I'm 15 years old again.
Right. I get that. And you said that quite clearly in your sort of opening remarks. What's interesting is somebody needs to sit with you and again, with both of you, and really dissect whether or not that is just you revivifying something from the past, or if she really is doing something that's triggering something very much like what happened in the past. You understand?
Yeah.
Your wife may be in a very relatively minor outburst you could experience as full-blown rage, just like you are accustomed from your mom. By the same token, her rages may even be worse than your mom's, and you may be revivifying things from the past, and somebody needs to help look through that.
And certainly what we are hearing is that both of you are in pain.
And how long have you been married?
5 years.
5 years. You got married young. Do you have kids?
We do, yeah. We have a 3-year-old daughter and a 6-month-old daughter.
All right. So on behalf of the kids, at least appeal to her on behalf of the kids, that the health of your marriage means everything to those kids and to the two of you. Secondly, you don't want your kids to be growing up and exposed to exactly what you were exposed to. Did your wife have a similar past to your mom? Did she have a bunch of difficult trauma?
My wife was raped when she was 14 years old and has had some really difficult you know, I felt for that last guy struggling with intimacy issues, because we've had to overcome that and have had to go to counseling for that. And I think she's done a really remarkable job trying to
good.
Remember it without reliving it.
And by the way, a 14-year-old that is raped, in my experience, in the significant majority of times, was sexually abused in childhood. That's why they become suitable victims for whoever these guys are. I heard somebody saying the other day that she was talking to a victimizer, it was like a rapist, and he was saying to her, oh yeah, I can walk a room and I can smell the damage. These fuckers. You wonder if I can just put a bullet in those guys. So Clark, good. So you have somebody you worked with. I would go back and keep working. The intimacy issue is fantastic that's moving along. Go ahead. What do you want to say?
Clark, just before you go, I would say just keep thinking about when somebody's in pain, showing compassion, because that can be really, really healing. So really try and help each other be compassionate to each other's pain, because then already you're looking at it like you're from the same page, on the same page even.
Get how to do that?
Yeah, I think I can.
Give me an example one more time.
What I was saying, Clark, is to be able to, I think what can really help is I can really see you're in pain. I can really, you know, I have so much compassion for what you have gone through. This is really difficult to see you in pain. And it also brings up my own stuff. So straight away, you are connected. And if you love each other, and it sounds like you clearly do, if you love each other, then that's a good place to start.
I see your pain. I understand
I really see your pain. And
mine coexist alongside of it and interacts with it, and sort of try to give it name. Bring it to life in the room.
I think I can do that.
All right, Clark. Thanks for the call. And then keep seeing the professional. That's a really important thing. Simone, we've just blown through another podcast. There you go.
So I want to come back.
You will come back, and we'll put you in many other situations, including perhaps with Mr. Ashley Madison.
Oh, yes.
Take him on. That'd be very interesting.
Noel is his name.
Chris, because like, yes, I want to see that.
Yeah, then you'll see the real fire in me.
Oh, you've seen Simone when she Simone got a little crazy in her. She can bring it out.
Bring it on. I like it, because then it's sort of like I'm allowed to bring out the crazy.
A reminder, please support the products that we that sponsor this show here. We thankfully have sponsors that bring out products that we really do believe in, like Stamps.com and LegalZoom. These guys are really
Tell me about Stamps.com.
No, we don't have to.
After the show, I will.
Stamps.com is an awesome sponsor. You should look into them, and if you use them, use sponsor code Drew.
Cool.
Awesome. They are awesome. Reminder that you can get a couple things at doctor.com. Please click through on the Amazon banner to support the pirate ship, or as Adam says, put a little wind in the sails of the pirate ship, to quote him precisely. We also have the highlights from the first three shows, the Adam and Drew reunion tour, Bakersfield, Santa Barbara, and Denver. It's available at adamcarolla.com, doctor.com as well, guys. Yes, and iTunes. And no two shows are the same when Adam and I get out there on the stage. So these are edited versions, and strangely, we have no idea what we're going to talk about. And we talk about something different every time. Speaking of that, you can see us in Carmel. Please show up if you're in that area, August 16th at the Sunset Center. We're going out to New England the following weekend, the 23rd, 24th, and 5th. We'll be in New Hampshire at Hampton Beach Casino Ballroom, Boston at the Wilbur Theater, and then Newport, Rhode Island, Newport Yacht Club. We definitely want to see people, so please turn up. And finally, don't forget to check out the groovy tunes that Chris Maxipata put together. Here's an example of one of them.
Yeah, I really like
this. Get the CD at the doctor.com website. Thank you all for joining us. We'll see you next time.
Bye.
Corolla Digital.